Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I suppose I could say, and boys and girls as well, since this is a family show, and it is still 10 p.m. on the West Coast on this October the 23rd, 2008, and on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone, it is October the 24th. Welcome, everyone. So nice to have you with us. It's my honor to once again spend a couple of hours with you looking at the truth, revealing the truth, and working our way through all the muck that's out there. And believe me, there's plenty of it within the last 24 hours. Some of you who regularly watch the political channels, such as C-SPAN. In my area, we don't have C-SPAN 2 anymore without subscribing to the digital aspect, and I'm not ready to be totally mind-controlled yet, so I haven't subscribed. However, we get the congressional hearings on C-SPAN 1, and the banking committee, the oversight committee, we'll say, was interrogating a few of the key players in this bailout scandal. This time, they felt it was important to bring former U.S. Treasury Secretary John Snow and ask him some questions. Of course, I think he was Treasury Secretary from 2003 through 2006. And they had Alan Greenspan, God's younger brother, and then they had Christopher Cox, who is the chairman or the director of the Security Exchange Commission, Securities Exchange Commission. And then they, just a few minutes ago, in fact, I just checked to see, because they're showing all of what I was unable to see during the day, and I don't even know that they broadcast this live. It looks like they're just playing the tape back, the entire proceeding. And it's nothing but spin and lies. It's amazing that these people can even keep a straight face. Watching Alan Greenspan reminded me of looking at a gecko. If you want to get into the reptilian thing tonight, it was like looking at a gecko. And listening to him speak and just lie about everything. General comments such as, well, we're right 60% of the time. That means we only fail 40% of the time. Now, I'm wondering if he needed a calculator to figure that out. And these are the people that are pulling the strings, making the decisions as to what they're going to do with the prime rate, the subprime rate, how much money they're going to print, what part of our infrastructure they're going to steal and give away to the Illuminati in Europe, and then acting and lying like the Federal Reserve is part of our federal government, like it's constitutionally legal. And I just get so incensed. I've written about this. G. Edward Griffin has written about this, and many, many other researchers about the illegality and the unconstitutionality of the Federal Reserve, and they have the cojones to bring these people on national television and have them lie to us even more. It's amazing. And then they have the same lying pundits on all the CNN shows and the MSNBC and Fox News and whatever else is out there, CNBC. They're just lying from one end of the, from the beginning of the program to the end. They don't stop. And I'm hearing people on some other talk shows on internet radio raising these rhetorical questions. Do they really think we're that stupid? Now, it's nice to hear these people on the shows, but I wish people would do something more than that and take action. You should be incensed because they're literally saying that, well, they're not even sure the money that we're giving them is going to solve the problem. I can tell you behind the scenes, it's a lot more desperate than the face that they're putting on in public. And while this is going on, these people are making money. I can guarantee you that Henry Paulson, the Treasury Secretary, still owns stock, still has a stake in Goldman Sachs, and all the rest of them do. And they've stolen trillions of dollars and given it to Israel, put it in Deutsche Bank in Germany and banks all around the world. And their issue right now, and I'm repeating myself, is that these funds have been frozen in foreign bank accounts, and they can't claim source of funds without revealing the fact that they're stolen. And the funny thing is that they're frozen because they know, the foreign bankers know that these are stolen funds. Greenspan, it was reported, was arrested earlier this year, and around the same time that George H.W. Bush was arrested and held for several days. Now, it's been reported that 3,000 bankers have been immediately arrested and taken over to Europe, either in England or in Germany, and incarcerated, given 25-year sentences for what they've done. They've been caught red-handed. Now, if I'm wrong about this, then there are a lot of people behind the scenes that have been studying this very carefully, and they're wrong, too. And then our country is doing just fine, and no one's lost any homes. There's no bailout. There's no reason to prop up the criminal activities of the banks and the Securities Exchange Commission. These people are acting like they don't really know how this happened, but they're now discovering it. Greenspan literally lied and said, "Well, they just found out about this." Folks, this has been going on since the 1980s. It's been going on for almost 30 years. It's been going on. And we've got plenty of examples. These guys should have really raised a stink on 9/11 or on 9/10/2001, the day before 9/11, when Donald Rumsfeld mentioned that they were missing $2.3 trillion. And they knew Dov Zakheim was the fiscal manager of the money going into the Pentagon. That money was stolen and given to Israel. And it's just incredible what's going on. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about that issue with tonight's guest. Not too much, because we've got some other things that we want to cover. The ever increasingly non-ending saga of Barack Obama, a man without a country, man without a family, and some new developing tidbits from behind the scene. With that, I want to welcome a very good friend. He's a fellow journalist, author. He's a metaphysician, a metaphysical scientist, and a great journalist. He's got a great website, educate-yourself.org. And it's one of the most popular research sites in the world. And he has been our Thursday night guest this whole month of October. With that, I welcome back to Evident Footprints, Mr. Ken Adachi. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Don. Very happy to be on with you again.
Well, you got to hear my introduction. Does it blow your mind what's going on, or are we just witnessing the total collapse of our political system and our banking system and our country?
Well, I certainly like the your ability to summarize these events. You really do grasp the central core of the deception that's being paraded before cameras. And, you know, I get a great deal of pleasure out of listening to your summaries of what's going on. You're pretty much explaining what's taking place. And your reaction is certainly similar to mine. I too am dumbfounded by the degree of lying that's taking place, and without flinching, without any concern for the facts at all. It is amazing. Now they're doing it because they repeatedly get away with it. The bulk of the the public is unaware of the true facts surrounding the bailout and surrounding the Federal Reserve, etc. I do notice this profound lack of basic understanding of political reality from the email I get. I do notice this. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, however, there's certainly a good number of people who are sharp, know the game, know what's afoot, and usually comment very wryly about the latest development in the play. I often refer to national political events as a play because it is scripted. I didn't invent that term, but I've certainly been using it for the last 10 or 12 years or so.
Well, history is a play, for that matter.
Right.
You know, it's
so
all scripted.
It's this ongoing play before the public that the Illuminati, because they certainly control the media, the main media outlets, when working through propaganda factories like Tavistock in England, they shape the news. They certainly are responsible for the political events. Most of what we see in the news as national, or let's, I should say, touted in the news as a worldwide or very big deal, a crisis that is almost always manufactured. It is not a natural event. So this would, of course, include pretty much all of the so-called terrorist attacks that have been paraded before the public of the world. So that includes the major, that includes 9/11, but prior to that it includes the earlier attempted bombings of the World Trade Center. It includes the Oklahoma City bombing. These events are caused by inside covert agents working for our government, working for, you know, the Israeli government, for the British government. They're working in league with each other to cause these events. In fact, all of the earlier activities of the so-called terrorists in the 70s and 80s and 90s are staged events. I remember well, I'm only guessing at the year now. I'm going to guess that probably in the 70s there was a bloody airport machine gunning attack. I can't even, you'll probably remember, I'm trying to remember the airport. It's a major airport in Europe. Pardon?
Yeah, there are a couple of events that occurred. The first one that comes to mind is the, pardon me for interrupting, but...
No, please, I need your assistance.
The Olympics in 1972,
yes.
At Munich, we had this so-called PLA, the Palestinian Liberation Organization,
yes. Mm-hmm.
Took the Israeli weightlifting team, if I remember correctly, that's who it was, and held them hostage, and these guys were masked. Now,
yes.
One would assume at that point that those very well may have been Israeli agents, the likely Mossad agents, posing as Palestinian Liberation Organization people.
Yes.
Just to get this whole terrorism thing rolling. You may be referring to Entebbe.
Entebbe was a rescue operation. I'm referring to the Red Brigade. They had, I'm sure, the group was responsible for this machine gunning. It might have been Frankfurt or maybe in Italy. It was somewhere in the 70s. This is the first world stage appearance of the so-called Red Brigade that was supposedly fomenting out of Italy. And they machine gunned a bunch of people at an airport. I forget how many died, 40, 50, 80. It was a large number. And naturally, those guys were killed. But that was the show up of the Red Brigade, and I recall the nationality of the shooters were mostly Asian. Now, whether they were Chinese, Japanese, Korean, I can't remember, but a large percentage of those guys were Asian. I do recall that. And then, if you remember, and that's the first time I heard about that, this whole phenomenon. Naturally, I thought it was on the level. I didn't know anything about the New World Order until the mid-90s I began to catch on with what the game was. So I accepted the cover story. Later on, they kidnapped and assassinated Aldo Moro, the prime minister of...
I was in Europe during that time. In fact, first I was in Germany, and I went to performed music at the base, the American Naval or Army base, where the Bodner-Meinhof gang bombed the guard post the day after the event.
Wow.
And I remember sitting outside the gate for 2 hours while they went through, our equipment vans and all of that. And then I was in Italy during the time that Moro was found in the trunk of his car. I think in an 18-month period, it seemed, they went through several presidents, and I know that in less than 20 years, they had 36 heads of state in Italy alone.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Most were either just removed or murdered.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same group of people always behind all these events. They're just jockeying for position and creating these events. Like you said, they're scripting them out calculatingly with the intention of usurping rights. And then what did we have after that? It took them quite a while to put it together, but they finally put together their European Union, which is nothing more than the Federal Reserve here in the States. Same people, same techniques, same tactics.
Very good. Okay, perfect. That's where I'm going. That at the time of the event, I believe the Red Brigade story was genuine. Growing group of fanatics. I couldn't really understand why this group would form up, because Italy, relatively affluent industrial country. Much of it defied logic, or what. But at the same time, we had other homegrown, but agency created operations like the Weathermen and it's cetera that spun this notion, at least to the public, that there's this growing incidence of these, let's say, quasi terrorist political groups that are fanatical in nature, and they're doing very dramatic things. They're kidnapping major politicians and eventually killing them. Well, what was the reality? Well, Moro wouldn't cooperate with a demand from Kissinger. Naturally, I find that out, much later in the mid-90s. And Kissinger essentially said, you either play ball with us or he threatened them. And what happens within a matter of, I think it was Moro's wife who really revealed this after Moro's death. She's the one who said that Kissinger had been threatening the husband, if he doesn't do X, Y, and Z, he's going to have problems. He made it clear. He was threatening his life. So the creation of these so-called terrorist groups are covert operations. They're using, I would presume, mind control individuals in most cases, but they're being trained and funded by these intelligent military groups that, you know, that all of our governments have and use as these hitmen, behind the scenes. We certainly saw it from the time they invaded Iraq. The stuff we saw in the news about these Al-Qaeda groups grabbing all these contractors and beheading them, I don't buy that for a second. That's just more covert operations from the British and the American and the Mossad, etc. The bombing in London that happened July, when was it, 2003? I'm trying to remember, 2004. There was the bus bombings, there was the subway bombings. Set up operation, just like 9/11. It's a set up operation. And that poor man that the British police chased all around the subway system there and finally, gunned him down, completely innocent. The man's just fleeing for his life. He had all these police chasing him for no valid reason. So they hunted down, and at the time, I remember in the news, they so broadly hinted this was a terrorist. He had an overcoat on and blah, blah, blah. Completely innocent man slaughtered in the subway systems of Britain for what? Hysteria. Because they're of course the police are accommodating this lunacy that's being manufactured in the media about this, Al Qaeda terrorist. Is the danger of Islam? And just tonight on television, a couple hours before, to do this show with you, I just heard a brief remark by Katie Couric. I don't even know the show she's on. But she started the introduction to that segment. She says the most, stunning the way she put it. The greatest threat to the United States is the growing presence of the Islamic extremists. That's what she said. And then they cut to a scenes in which they showed, would look like, Middle Eastern guys, with all kinds of, cloths wrapped around their face, machine guns, the whole nine yards. And it's not true. The growing menace of Islamic terrorism is an utterly fabricated, concocted scenario. It was planned this way back in the 18th century, that they were going to manufacture a Armageddon-like final confrontation between, Christianity, the Jewish religion, and the Islamic religion. They're just following the script, and rubber mouths like Katie Couric are just paid shills for this propaganda. So it's important that I'm hoping that enough people realize that everything that we see in national news is following a planned script. The economic crisis, they're calling it that, was created. The bailout was a, quote, a rip-off answer to a created crisis. Everything that will transpire in the coming months and years are going to be created. When we're pretty soon now, because it's building, the momentum is building in the media, we will have a coming out of the aliens. I've been using the expression on my website for a couple years now. The aliens are coming! ! The aliens are coming, because there was a movie, a successful movie. I think it was in the late 70s, mid late 70s, It was called The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming. And it's just a play on those words for those old enough to have seen the movie. They're steadily escalating stories, articles, as well as there's more and more sightings of up close sightings of alien-type saucers, spacecraft. And pretty soon now we're going to have some sort of official admittance that, yes, folks, I'm sorry we couldn't tell you earlier because we were fearful of, you know, the public panicking, which is the unfounded and untrue excuse they've been using since the mid-50s, that if they reveal the information of extraterrestrials on Earth, that somehow we're all supposed to run out into the street pulling our hair and committing suicide or otherwise going nuts. I mean, it's so typical of the moronic excuses they parade before the public. Mm-hmm. It would be nice if they had more creative writers who could at least come up with something more creative, you know, not just these. But they're not bright people for the most part.
Talk about Martians, they always bring up this thing about green men. I would submit to you that the green men are in the Federal Reserve and in the New York banks. Those are the real green men.
The real green men. Yeah. Yeah. Good observations, Don. So much is contrived, and soon we'll have the alien outing. It's part of a operation that was planned decades ago called Project Bluebeam. And all of these national, or I should say international, crisis, confrontations, conflicts, events, the planners always attach a name to it. It's Operation Something. You know, the mind control programs are called Operation MK Ultra or Project Monarch or the Montauk Project. They always attach a name. Chemtrail Springs, Operation Cloverleaf, Operation Red Sky, the Roundup under Martial Law of American Citizens, that has a name. Operations, all these things have an operational tag to them. And the one that includes the outing of the rush of the alien present to the world's public, one subset of Project Bluebeam is the coming out of aliens. So anyone who's listening to this recording will see this reality unfold probably within a year or two. They started to build incidents of sightings quite strongly about 2 years ago. And at the time, I said, well, it looks like maybe they're coming out with it. And then it seemed to lay back. I expected maybe around 2005 or early 2006 that they might actually do this. But no, they're just building steam. And now I see that the steam is building, but it's coming from much more mainstream outlets. Example, Sky News in the UK is a Rupert Murdoch-owned propaganda outlet, and now they're mentioning the sightings and presence of UFOs. And you'll find that CNN certainly here in this country recently, plenty of videotape sightings that you can see on YouTube and the like. From Mexico and South America, especially, but the sightings will grow in Europe and finally in North America. It seems that in the United States, these large mega fleets of overflying UFOs, etc. The U.S. seems to be the last one. There, well, perhaps some parts of Asia are going to spring it on. But it's plenty of reports from South America. In Mexico, of large sightings. Now, first, they might be real craft, but more likely the distant, large fleets of saucers that one might see in a video are probably artificially created with holograms, because if you read the paper on my website called Project Bluebeam, these holograms can look extremely realistic. They're space-based laser systems. There's satellites that have these lasers that when they project a beam and these two beams come together in space, it can create an image that looks real in every sense of the word. It's very hard to detect a hologram because the technology is so high. James Caswell recently mentioned in one of his interviews that the holographic technology is so advanced that even a hologram created but a few feet away from you looks absolutely real to the eye. Real, you know, honest to goodness, moving human being or whatever the image is created. He says it's almost impossible for the eye to detect that it's being created because the technology is so high. So certainly imagine what looks to be a huge armada of UFO saucers, hundreds, 500,000, 800,000, flying overhead at, let's say, 25 or 30,000 feet altitude. That's a piece of cake to create with holographic imaging. But listeners should be aware that that's going to come pretty soon now. That's not too far off in the distance. There are just too many stories being peppered into the news about the alien presence. So that's coming. It's part of the script, though. That's what we have to... That's why I'm mentioning it. It's one part of the takeover script.
Well, it's so interesting. Now we diverted, or let's say we morphed into the UFO stuff. And we were talking about these early terrorists. These are false flag terrorist events,
correct,
is what
correct,
they are.
Right. We're talking about the Red Brigade. And
I find it interesting the time period that I'm speaking of this attack at, I believe it was in Mannheim. There are several bases in Mannheim. There they call them military casernes. They use the German name. They're former German outposts that have been taken over by NATO. In some cases, they're run by U.S. Army or British Army or French. Basically, the three independently operate them. However, there are a lot more American bases in Germany than there are British or French. And I'm looking right now at Wikipedia under the Red Army faction. This is the history of the Meinhof gang.
Yes.
And I remember they named six of the members at that time. Now, how does one carry out a terrorist attack and leave and they know the names of the six people?
Yes.
And don't, it's the same scenario that we had with the 19 Arab hijackers on 9/11.
Exactly. They knew all the names. They knew the pictures. One of the, or two or three, I forgot how many of these passports, while everything else, a 110-story building, powderizes to a fine dust, but the intact passport of one of the so-called Arab hijackers is found as ground zero. Miracle upon miracles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, I think originally they said it was an FBI agent found it two blocks away. So I guess he was able to roll the window down and throw it out. Oh, man.
Yes.
I don't mean to make light of the event. It's just the idiocy behind
such statements. No, it's the absurdity of the attempt to snow us as to what actually occurred that day.
Yeah, exactly. But this particular event that I was aware of, and I was on that scene the very next day.
Yeah.
And actually, we hadn't heard about it yet. I didn't find out about it until we were asking why we were waiting, and then it was explained. And of course, we could see the damage. Interesting about that base is it had, I would say, it was about a 12-foot high wrought iron fence totally around the base. And I had access to bases near where I lived. And, in fact, I was teaching martial arts at a couple of bases on the weekends. And you could walk on some of these bases. One was a tactical missile base. They didn't even have a guard post. there. It was wide open. Anybody could just drive onto the base. If you got stopped, you got stopped by somebody, but you know, by the CID or somebody. But I was amazed, and I'd ask people, you know, why is this left unguarded like that?
Yes.
It's amazing the differences. And then there, with that big tall gate, we still had to wait 2 hours till we could get in, you know, to perform that evening.
Yes.
But it's amazing that that event is not mentioned in this history, this very detailed history on Wikipedia. That particular event that occurred in 1976 is not mentioned.
Right.
And they mention other they mention Heidelberg on May 24th of 1972.
See,
this stuff started in 72. With them. Now they go back a bit before. There's a police officer in Hamburg that was murdered on October 22nd. That was yesterday. How many years is that? 29 and 8. do the math.
Was it 71?
Yeah,
so
1971.
If it was 71, that's 29 and 8.
37 years ago.
37, right.
37 years ago, that's the first event that they marked from the Bader Meinhof gang, or let's say the RAF. You know, they throw these names out there. And really, you know, you have to ask yourself what these people think they're going to do, this small group of people. Are they just going to raise havoc a little bit to make a political statement? Or is it about getting people out of prison? It's too contrived, I think. And I'm sure you would agree that
yes. Oh, yes, yes. That was the premise of these examples, is to illustrate that these events are not naturally evolving events, that they're scripted and staged, and the manipulators behind training, funding, mind controlling the participants in these staged, quote, terrorist attacks are the intelligence groups of the major countries, like the U.S., like Germany, like, you know, England and Israel, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
They're working.
Okay.
Yep.
Oh, well, go ahead.
Okay.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
So that was just hearkening back to, in my, you know, following World War II, life was rather pleasant, not only in the United States, but I mean, naturally Europe had to recover from the bombing damage, et cetera, of the war. So they went through a 15 years to two decades of recovery, a great deal of rebuilding. But politically speaking, there wasn't much agitation going on in the world. The Korean War occurred in the early 50s. Another, not quite contrived, but certainly a set-up deal. However, you know, the 50s were a relatively placid decade politically, and even into the 60s. The 60s had a loosening of public morals, we'll say, the explosion of the what was called the Sex Revolution, and then with the advent of the Beatles, apparently we were told or led to believe, overtaking the dominance of in rock and roll of people like Elvis Presley and so forth, the American influence. America and rock and roll, well, America was considered the home of the birthplace of rock and roll, and America sort of had the dominance in entertainment and there until the Beatles came along, and then supposedly we were led to believe that the Beatles were a set-up group. They were being used by British Tavistock folks, etc. Of course, I'm not blaming them. They don't necessarily realize the role they were being used in, but it was their music, etc., and their bad boy counterpart in entertainment, the Rolling Stones, helped to introduce large-scale use of drugs like marijuana, prior
well,
to
yeah,
that.
Well, yeah, that was all Tavistock, don't you think? I mean, they
well,
had
yeah,
Herman's
that's
Hermits
exactly
and
what I'm
the,
saying.
The Dave mean, Clark Five and,
exactly.
You know.
That the whole so-called, it was sold in the media as the British invasion. Supposedly
mm-hmm.
they had all this new, more interesting music coming out of England, and at the top of the heap were the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. But all those British groups, again, these people were being used. I'm not saying that they're part of the conspiracy. They're just all being used and manipulated.
Mm-hmm.
Good groups. I mean, I'm not saying musically they weren't. It wasn't the Stones instead of a lot of fun. But it's what they were representing on a social, societal level that was more damaging to American culture. Because during the 50s and at least early 60s, the American culture was doo-wop, the sort of life that's portrayed on TV shows like Happy Days, for those old, you know, old enough to remember mm-hmm. to see that sort of a sanitized version. But there was no thought of a heavy involvement in drugs. At best, teenagers, you know, drank alcohol and maybe smoked cigarettes. That was sort of the big sin, and necking in the park and so forth. But as a society, you know, we had, I'm guessing at the time, but probably a 10 or 12% divorce rate tops, and you didn't have child custody battles. You didn't have many of the battles that helped to tear asunder the fabric of the American family, the cohesiveness and, let's see, stability of the American family. These events grew out of the explosion of the loosening of morals in the 60s, which is Tavistock directed, and with the Beatles kind of making it okay for middle-class white American kids to do dope, smoke dope, maybe try some other stuff. But the Beatles helped sell the notion that dope, smoking marijuana is cool, it's fun, you know, it's okay, there's nothing wrong with it. And I'm not even making the statement that smoking marijuana is such a big deal. I'm not sure it is. But it certainly helped open up the door for the use of other more serious drugs. Once you get in your idea that smoking dope is pleasurable, fun, recreational, well, when you're being, you know, a lot of other stuff becomes available that's much harder core drugs, but let's say easier to get. We know that the CIA, Vietnam War, etc., the production of all that cocaine was behind the explosion of hardcore drugs in this mm-hmm. country. The government, the CIA, the covert agencies are the biggest drug lords. They always have been. And
well, the Beatles themselves wrote songs. I mean, when you think that they came out with a cartoon-like movie, yep. Yellow Submarine.
Yeah, right. It was all parody of drug use, right.
Yeah, and then the song Hey Jude.
Exactly.
It was many years later on that a jazz musician in New York told me, you know, he was going to play that song. He said, "I'm not condoning the use of drugs." And I said, are you saying that's a drug song too? And he goes, "A Jude is a fix," meaning heroin, you know.
Heroin
so,
fix.
So,
and you remember Peter, then, Paul, and Mary? Also the same era, Puff the Magic Dragon?
Yeah, exactly.
They were selling, again, very cleverly, but they were selling the subliminal notion to large populations of youths in this country who would not otherwise consider dabbling in that, to dabble in that. Why? They want to break down the moral underpinnings of American society. Naturally, they wanted to do that in European society too, but the focus has always been on the United States. They want to destroy the United States from within. That has been the plan. Well, this is the way you do it. You decay and corrupt the society, starting with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So that in my generation, you know, throughout my whole life, I never seriously entertained taking drugs. It's just, no way. It's insane. I just wouldn't go there. But I had enough parental influence, school influence, and societal, meaning my peers, influence that The only image I had of drugs is that's bad news stuff. You know, that's Frank Sinatra, the man with the golden arm. That's the kind of influence that I had as a young person as to, you know, the stupidity and danger of trying drugs. It's just not something any intelligent person does. But with the advent of the Tavistock operation of breaking the moral underpinnings of the country from the mid-64s for about 65
and really dividing the family was the goal, you know, to break
exactly.
breakups of the family.
You got it. That's what I'm saying, that the Beatles helped soften it. It helped penetrate the psyche of individuals. I came from a, you know, lower-class, blue-collar background, but I certainly had the mindset, because of the eras that I, you know, the formative years, that no way I wouldn't consider, you know, drugs for a second. And none of the friends of my age range ever took drugs. It just was outside of our belief system completely. Yep, drank beer, smoked cigarettes, of course. But drugs, out of the question. However, they softened those taboos from the mid-60s forward, so that a lot of people, and I, you know, I was involved in music too, and I got to meet a lot of people in the entertainment world, and I saw that in that generation, who were, you know, 10 years or 15 years younger than I, the easy readiness to go there, to use these drugs. And I used to be shocked. I would tell myself, holy mackerel, how can these people buy this so easily? You know, they're on a slippery slope here. And many of them did come to a poor end, ultimately. You know, they lost whatever drive they had. They got addicted to what junk they were getting on. Then they had to turn to crime. They finally wound up in jail. Some of them got killed. I mean, it's a bad ending for people who go down that road. But this breaking of the moral underpinnings of this country was initiated by Tavistock through useful idiots like the Rolling Stones and like the Beatles. They represented icons to millions and millions of young people. You emulate an icon. That's what young people do. You dress like them. You listen to their music, and you act like them. They knew that. The planners of these events knew that.
Now, yeah. I was going to try to move us forward because we have a couple of other.
I agree. We're spending quite a bit of time on that. So I'll stop that. I'll just cap it by saying, all, quote, terrorist events that occur anywhere in the world, the bombings in Pakistan or in Africa, or any future bombings that we see here in this country, or any other major event, is staged. People have to know it. Now, I just want to mention one other area, and I'll sort of get away from this entire crisis, but back in the late 90s, I should say from the mid-90s forward, I became aware of, I just got my first computer on 1994, 9995. I used to listen to the Art Bell radio show on a fairly steady basis here. Particularly in the evening, I used to, you know, go for a walk, and I took a little Walkman with me, and he was the only guy that I eventually found on the dial that seemed to have some, you know, talk radio. I wasn't interested in music, and silly talk bores me. So I was kind of interested. He had these far-out topics, aliens, UFOs, you know, conspiracy-type stuff. Okay, so I listened to Art Bell a lot. And it was listening to the Art Bell show one night that a caller in mentioned a new website that just showed up that supposedly is being hosted by gray aliens. It was called Zeta Talk. And I had just gotten a computer, I just got on the internet, and naturally I was intrigued by that. Well, let me look at this. The caller was gushing on and on about it. He said, there's so much fantastic information here. And Art Bell says, really? And blah, blah, blah. So Art Bell put a link of that website up on his website for a week or two or three, I forget how long. So that's how I found it. I went to Zeta Talk. And Zeta Talk presented a great deal of information. I wound up spending the next 3-4 months reading the thousands of pages that were already posted at that website. There was a tremendous amount of information there. And I'm not a speed reader. I typically print material out to read it. So I was printing out 3-inch notebooks, three-ring binder notebooks of the material I was finding on Zeta Talk. It took me a long time to read it, 3, 4, 5 months. It was a lot of reading. I was fascinated by what I was reading. They were warning that there was going to be this return of the so-called Planet X. It has multiple names. Sitchin calls it the 12th planet in his series of books called the Earth Chronicles.
Yeah, Nibiru, actually.
Yeah, it's also called Nibiru, and it's also sometimes it's called the 10th planet, and sometimes it's called, well, it was christened Planet X in the print media sometime around 1983-84, because supposedly one of our orbiting telescopes spotted this incoming planetoid object, and it seemed to be approaching. There was a brief mention in the newspapers about it at the time. Okay, so fast forward, I became intrigued, and I bought Sitchin's books. I read his books, also a great deal of reading. Certainly, it seemed to me to be on the level. Sitchin's scholarship appears to be very high, at least to a non-Sumerian scholar. The guy seems to know what he's talking about. Lots of photos, lots of credible evidence, clay tablets, etc., to support the contention in his book that there used to be this alien presence on Earth, which I'm quite convinced was true, and that this planet, which circles between our sun and another dark sun far out, far, far out in the universe, it takes 3,600 years for it to make a complete revolution between these two suns, our suns and its so-called dark twin. And everything sounds plausible, and according to this website, Zeta Talk, they said that the planet is due to make a loop around our sun in the year 2003. They specifically said it will come barreling through in either late May or early June of 2003. I came upon this information in November of 1995. So what I did is that I wrote a synopsis and I put it on the internet. I called it Coming Attractions, in which I gave a overview of the New World Order. That was part of this paper that I called Coming Attractions. But the larger part of it was devoted to the information being presented at Zeta Talk, that there's going to be this 12th planet. It's going to come through our solar system, and because it's so huge, its magnetic influence, it will be so large on Earth that it will overcome Earth's normal rotational position. The normal axis of the Earth will just kind of bob like a magnetic cork in space as this huge, much larger magnet rolls by us, even though it's going to be so many millions of miles away from us. The magnetic influence is so large that the Earth was going to flip its axis, and the Earth would stop rotating entirely for 3 days. And in the course of this, we would have massive volcanic eruptions, massive earthquakes, and massive flooding on a biblical scale, similar to the sort of destruction that followed the Great Flood and Noah and the Ark and all that.
Yeah, and we have to take a break right now.
Okay.
But when we come back, we'll continue this.
We'll continue from there. Okay.
You're listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and our special guest, Ken Adachi, and I will return in a few minutes. Don't go away. More to come.
Idaho Observer, a monthly 24-page newspaper in its ninth year of addressing issues that affect all freedom-loving Americans, is one of the few remaining newspapers courageous enough to print the truth. Concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you? Subscribe today. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues, the Idaho Observer prints what you need to know to be a fully informed American. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307.
There are many types of storable foods, but how about a superfood that contains every nutrient that the human body needs for survival? 50% protein, 300 milligrams of potassium per ounce, and calcium and magnesium for your heart and bones, with many more nutrients found in this incredible food source that the government does not want you to have. This product is available in powder, seeds, and oil, and is shipped free to your door in the U.S. This product is illegal to grow in the U.S., but is legal to import. Don't waste time thinking about storing food. Plan ahead and prepare for yourself and your family now, and be in control of your destiny. You can save and invest your money, but in the end, food will be your greatest asset. Remember what the Word of God says in Ezekiel 7:19. Call 908-691-2608 and see what the powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Remember, food will be your greatest asset. Call 908-691-2608. This product does not contain THC. Call 908-691-2608 today.
Many years ago when I was 23, I was married to a widow who was pretty as could be. This widow had a grown-up daughter who had hair of red. My father fell in love with her and soon they two were wed. This made my dad my son-in-law and changed my very life. For my daughter was my mother cause she was my father's wife. To complicate the matter, even though it brought me joy, I soon became the father of a bouncing baby boy. My little baby then became a brother-in-law to Dad, and so became my uncle, though it made me very sad. For if he was my uncle, then that also made him brother to the widow's grown-up daughter, who of course was my stepmother. I'm my own grandpa. I'm my own grandpa. It sounds funny, I know, but it really is so. Oh, I'm my own grandpa. My father's wife then had a son who kept him on the run, and he became my grandchild cause he was my daughter's son. My wife is now my mother's mother and it makes me blue, because although she is my wife, she's my grandmother too. If my wife is my grandmother, then I am her grandchild, and every time I think of it, it nearly drives me wild.
This has got to be the strangest thing I ever saw.
As husband of my grandmother, I am my own grandpa. I'm my own grandpa.
Everybody!
I'm my own grandpa. It's so funny, I know, but it really is so.
Hey!
I'm my own grandpa.
Second hour of Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. Welcome back to the show. and our special guest this evening, Mr. Ken Adachi. Ken, we've been talking about all kinds of stuff, the bailout and all the lies being told, all the setups for these terrorist events that have been going on for, God, well over 40 years, probably 100 years if you really want to get down to brass tacks, and that's not spelled with an X on the end.
Yes.
And then we're talking about these sightings of UFOs, aliens, Planet X or Nibiru, whatever you want to call it,
yes.
the 10th planet. And this is, you know, I've got feelings about this. You know, we know there's a Galactic Federation. There are many, many people who are spiritually awake that know that there are hundreds of planets represented within that federation. And when you hear the stories about Planet X or certain catastrophes that are on the way, it's always the Pleiadians that are the ones delivering this message. I don't know if you've noticed that. Any comment about that?
Well, I'll just briefly say that this Zeta Talk information was coming from Zeta Reticulans, which are the little grays. Now, there was much information on that website, I believe, is true. There's a lot of information at that website, and many of the things they discuss about metaphysics, I believe, are true.
Who was their webmaster?
Well, it's a woman who goes by the name of Nancy Leader, and I said this at the time when I wrote the synopsis was around 1996. I put it on the website probably early 97, I'm thinking, and I had it on the website until the late spring of 2003, because that's when this event was supposed to happen. When it didn't happen, and I had gotten information from two or three other reliable sources that put me at ease in saying that it's not going to come through. It's not going to happen the way they're predicting. It's just, we won't have this event. So nevertheless, I was relieved to see the month of May and June of 2003 pass. I had built up a expectation of it being, you know, sort of a very rough situation following the passage of this planet, assuming you even survived it. I had been under the impression that would occur for 8 solid years, and obviously it affected many plans in my life as to what I was going to do, etc. So, long story short, it didn't happen. But it did teach me a lesson. Number one is that there are forces afoot attempting to convince an ordinary individual like me, has no special knowledge, no special anything, just an average run-of-the-mill, you know, Joe American citizen. I'm just about as typical as you can get of an American citizen. It told me, because, you know, I first warned my relatives and closest friends. You know, I sent them a copy, a letter. It was a very long letter. I forget how many pages it ran to, 17, 20 pages or something. And, you know, some of them were open to the ideas. Most of them thought, whoa, I must have lost a screw. So it was embarrassing. I mean, I felt, naturally, I did it out of a genuine concern. If you believe, or you're led to believe, or convinced that these things are going to occur, it's human nature to want to warn those closest to you to try to do something or get out of harm's way or prepare in some way. So I was suckered into that deal, and I learned that they have these mind influencing operations, mind conditioning operations going on, and it's the government behind it. It's agencies like the CIA, like NASA, who are, you know, NASA's involved in much more than spaceships. You know, they're involved in mind control. And all these other secretive organizations, NSA, etc., to dupe people, to fool people. They're running these psychological operations, so we're kind of in a panic mode. I was sent a small booklet in June of this year from Burgos, Spain. The name of the book is Hercolubus, Hercolubus, H-E-R-C-O-L-U-B-U-S, or Red Planet, written by a man named V.M. Rombolu. Now, this book was sent to me because of my website, because of the sort of information on my website. This organization sent me this book free because they believe the information to be true. It's another version of Planet X, the book, in which this author, who's been greatly, completely, apparently, influenced by Gnosticism. I'm going to come back to that in a minute. And he's convinced that the Earth will come to an end because of the destructive action of this red planet passing through our solar system, and that no one will survive, because he says he's traveled in the astral plane often and he's seen all these things. He's been able to see the aftermath of these events, and that no one will survive. So so I sort of wonder, what's the point of telling us? If no one's going to survive, what have you accomplished by telling the world, at least the version of the passage of the red planet, of the 12th planet or Planet X that I was getting from the Zeta Talk site, at least made it sound like it's possible to survive the event if you got in a safe location, a highly elevated area, and you sort of built a semi-underground shelter so you can, you know, survive the winds, and naturally had to store a lot of food and have your own sources of water and food production and all that. So I was involved in that too during the 90s, participating in this workbook that the Zeta Talk was overseeing, sort of how to, it was a survival guide. It was called Troubled Times. It's still on the internet. It's full of tips of how to survive, you know, when there's no longer government structure, when there's no longer, you know, supermarkets to go to, et cetera. It's just a large compilation of survival tips. Okay. So, now, I read this book just recently. I just opened the package, even though I got it in June, and I read the book, and I can see that I'm getting this fellow, completely sincere individual. I'm not sure he's still alive, but the organization that sent me the book, I'm sure they believe this. They sent me this out of goodwill. The same reason I published that synopsis I called Coming Attraction out of goodwill. I just wanted to try to do the right thing to forewarn people of what I saw was, you know, I was led to believe was in a very soon to transpire catastrophe. Zeta Talk, instead of dropping out of the internet and just dropping out of sight, continues on. Nancy Leader offers this completely ludicrous explanation that the first warning about the 2003 passage was somehow done to throw the government off. Now, where the logic of that is, I don't know, but that's what she claimed. And that the
they're doing a great job of throwing themselves off at everything they do. They don't need outside help from anybody.
Yeah, and then she went on to say, actually, it was just, you know, a way to throw the government off so they wouldn't close us down. But the real passage date is 2012. That's when the red planet, Planet X, Nibiru, the 12th planet, is truly passing through. And if you don't get ready for the 2012, the real event, you know, this was just a run trial, you know, just to keep the government off our back of 2003. If you're not ready for the 2012 event, then you're going to die because you need to be surviving. Okay, so what I did is that I put up an article that I called Planet X, the Sequel. I put that up in the summer, 2003 or maybe early 2004, I can't remember, in which I essentially said, Zeta Talk, I said, Nancy Leader, I believe, is a good person. I think now it seems clear to me she's mind-controlled to the hilt. She is acting as a shill for this disinformation campaign that the world's going to end with this passion. Same with this book. This man has been convinced of this, and because he keeps on referencing Gnosticism. I want to briefly mention Amitak Stanford. I have some critical essays on my website about her as well. She came to my attention somewhere in the late 1990s, 2000, somewhere around there. She first came to my attention somewhere around 2003, 2004. I come to find out subsequently she was the former wife of Joseph Chiappolonia, a doctor in Australia, who was putting material up on Jeff Renz's website around 1998 that also foretold of the end of the world. The theme of his essays were the end time terminal madness, he called it part one, part two, part three. Jeff Renz must have had 8-10 radio interviews with this guy. I didn't listen to any of the radio interviews because I was so infuriated and disgusted by what this man was saying in these essays that I wrote some critical remarks at the time. I come to find out Amitak Stanford divorced him and married another man, a lawyer by the name of Stanford, and she comes out with her own website activity when somewhere 2002, 2003, 2004, somewhere in that range. It was the materials, other people sent it to me, and I had an open mind. I asked C.S. Livingstone in Canada. He had more time than me. Reader stuff. Write some kind of review of what the impression you got. He did. It was generally sort of positive, but he was saying that, it doesn't look good. Her deal is that she's in communication with these extraterrestrials, and bad things are coming pretty soon, and kind of get ready. It's sort of an echoing of the Zeta Talk type of warning.
Well, if I may interject,
yeah.
And the guy that's astral traveling and seeing the total destruction of the planet,
yeah.
If he's
yeah.
right, then I'm going to change my show to a music show. From this point on, I'm going to enjoy the rest of my days.
Right.
Now,
right.
That sort of just totally debunks Armageddon in the Bible, too, doesn't it? We can forget about...
I was going to get to that aspect of the so-called... people are calling themselves Christian evangelicals, particularly the people who are listened to or associated with John Hagee in Texas. All of the so-called Protestant evangelical, non-denominational, so-called Christian groups who are buying into Armageddon scenario, Jack Vanapies, I see him on TV all the time. He's one of these Armageddon sellers. I mentioned this in my essay on British Israel. It's all a put-up job. It's all a government-sponsored psychological disinformation campaign. There is not going to be any, miraculous return of Christ in person to rule from Jerusalem. If there is an Armageddon scenario, it's not because it was inspired by Christ or God, for God's sakes. It's because it was maneuvered into position by the Illuminati and all their henchmen minions in the military, the Israeli government is at the forefront of these shenanigans to have us believe there's going to be this ultimate confrontation between Christianity and Islam on the fields of Armageddon, It's a load of crap. It's a lie from top to bottom, and I wish more of these very unthinking, undiscerning evangelicals who bought into this mind-washing propaganda for what, the last 20 years, 30 years, since at least Pat Robertson's been on TV, they've been selling this bill of goods. It's all contrived.
Mm-hmm.
All of the asteroids hitting the Earth scenarios, contrived. Planet X, the red planet, the Nostradamus, the red terror coming through, another variation on the red planet catastrophe. It's BS. None of it's true.
Okay. That said, if we can move along, let me just say that I find it interesting that a planet has enough consciousness that it can target planet Earth. And it's out there as this rogue planet. And they're saying, well, you can see it from the southern hemisphere, that there are some amateur astronomers that have their Walmart telescopes fixed on the skies, and they can get glimpses of it. And then you have NASA out there in space, and they're not seeing this out in space. I'm telling you, it's not true. Now, they would be telling us. They would be making plans. What's the point of the bailout? I mean, you know, just if they're not going to be around to spend the money, why are they so worried about it at this point? Really,
well,
why are they worried?
Okay, first, there is, in my opinion, there is going to be no worldwide catastrophe of a Planet X coming through to cause these earthquakes, volcanoes, and all that. That's now I'm firmly convinced that it's a sucker's game if you believe that. Although the information being sold over the internet mostly, and in books, and in people who claim to be, and I'm sure are claim to be abductees, they're usually actually being abducted, as James Caswell mentioned in his book, by
COINTELPRO?
Right. They're called My Labs. They're military staged, quote, alien abductions, in which they're using cloned beings, which look like those little grays, but they're actually cloned beings. And they perform these, the abductions and all the medical experiments on abducted people and etc. But the military is involved in these staged abductions. They've been doing these abductions since what?
Betty and Barney Hill.
There you go. Right. That was in the early 60s. These are the government is involved. What we see in the public press is that we're led to believe that they're, quote, extraterrestrial abductions. Well, many of them are, but a larger percentage, particularly the terror, you know, which the individuals are terrorized, are often the combination military alien my lab abductions. Sometimes these people are believe they're taken aboard spacecraft. They're actually being hypnotized, drugged, etc., and they're really winding up in an underground facility in which they're being all these things are being put upon them, and then they're returned back to the home. But in other cases, they are taken aboard craft. But our own government and other governments have what look like spacecraft, you know, flying saucers, etc. We fly and drive our own. So I'm just reiterating this because I'm getting more and more emails from people, very sincere, I'm sure they're sincere. I haven't published any of this on my website. They want to forewarn me of this great catastrophes that are coming. There's the correct name of the person, but it's Mother Somebody, and she's already sent me three or four very sincere warnings about impending doom. These individuals are being manipulated. They're, yeah, sure, they're in channeling with someone. They're hearing voices. They're getting apparitions. I'm sure of all that. They're not making it up, but they are being controlled. These are contrived doomsday scenarios. And everyone who's pitching any level of doom and gloom, and I include Steve Quayle in this category, are working on behalf, or at least fulfilling the agenda of the Illuminati, which is to create this panic. And I briefly mentioned Amitak Stanford. One of the reasons I criticize her so harshly is that she's selling a narcissism inspired end of the world scenario, in which she now just recently and told a reporter in New Zealand that I'm an alien. She admits I'm an alien, and I've been in contact. It's true. She her Fairy Wars. I haven't put it on my website yet. I have a lot of information that I've also received from local residents in the town where Amitak and her ex-husband, Joseph Chappelloni, live. It's called Stanthorpe, Australia. I have a lot of information that I've not yet published. It's very patent place type of stuff. Okay, yeah. But anyway, again, I believe she sees herself as a tragic figure who's trying her best to forewarn the world of this impending doom. But frankly, she'll say, you know, there's not much you can do about it. There, according to her and this former husband of hers, Dr. Joseph Chappelloni, there's just a certain elite chosen few who have been ordained to survive these events. And the majority of us, you and me and, you know, 95% of the rest of the world, are not among the chosen elites. Therefore, unfortunately, we're going to have to go down with the planet when all these bad things happen. Now, I'm sure she believes that, but I'm also now convinced that that woman is under mind control, as is Chappelloni, because Chappelloni's really often left field. When you read his material and his multiple busts, he started to claim the end of the world was going to come around the year 2000, then he moves up to 2001, 2002. I mean, this guy's prediction keeps on going bust because he's being manipulated. This man is programmed. Right.
Okay, speaking of, we could go on and on, but I'd like to, us to get to the meat of what we were going to talk about tonight, if that's okay.
Okay, yeah.
I don't mean to be rude.
There's other areas I want to build up, but more and more people are going to come upon information of the doom and gloom soon to end of the world. If you're believing the evangelical stuff, then it's going to be because Christ is supposed to return. There's going to be the Antichrist. We're going to have this big battle. Finally, the forces of Christ will subdue these evil Islamic terrorists, and Christ will rule for 1,000 years. And only the chosen among the Jack Vanity crowd are going to be beamed up and avoid all this nasty difficulties that will occur in planet Earth, because they're going to be part of the rapture. That man actually seriously repeats the complete concocted story of a rapture. There is not going to be any rapture, and if anybody gets beamed up, you're going to wind up in alien spacecraft, and you're going to be lunch, because these aliens that are involved in this this deception eat human beings. And James Casbolt corroborated that in his in the chapters to his book, which are posted on my website.
That said, let's move on if we can.
I'm bringing it up because this is what's going to cause a great deal of panic and anxiety in large numbers of people.
These are diversions.
It's just a diversion.
Yeah. Okay. Right now, in real time, they're diversions to keep us from seeing what's really going on.
Okay.
Now, even we're going to talk about another diversion now. If I may be so bold to move us along here. There's a lawsuit that Philip Berg filed to require Osama Joe Biden, Barack Obama, to present a certificate of live birth, and the judge ordered him to do that as well as a certification of his naturalization as a U.S. citizen, and his oath of allegiance.
Yep.
Now, none of that has been done. That's been ignored. That case is moving on into the Supreme Court. Now, very recently, an online journalist by the name of Andy Martin, who I happened to speak to this evening, by the way, filed a lawsuit in Hawaii. And he filed that lawsuit against the governor and the secretary of the health department for the state of Hawaii.
Yes.
Again, with a whole slew of allegations and you know, requiring them to submit him a copy of Obama's birth certificate. Now, he had a team. He told me this evening that he's had a team there in Hawaii during the past week. And Obama's grandmother suddenly took ill, and he has to go to visit her, you know, to take care of her.
In Hawaii.
Now, one would wonder when the last time he actually saw her was.
Yes.
As far as we know from photographs, 1992.
Yes.
But then again, we don't even know that those photographs were taken in those years, just because of all the anomalies.
Yep.
I read Andy Martin's work. Now, he has written a book, and I've not read the book. However, he is basically pushing this birth certificate issue, and of course he's pushing his book as well.
Yes.
And I'm not really going to push his book. I'm not really interested in it. But I did ask him a few questions, and I'd say he was nice, a bit condescending. In fact, reading his writing, he's condescending as if no other writer than himself has actually printed anything or investigated anything about Barack Obama. He makes such a statement.
He's telling that to you. He's saying that to you.
Oh, he says this in his article, on his blog site.
Okay.
Speaking to me, I told him I'm a writer with the Idaho Observer. I never heard of that. Who are they? You know, that kind of scenario. And I said, well, I guess they're not as big as your blog site. they've only been around for 12 years. They're a national newspaper and well known. Their articles are published all over the world, but I'm sure you're not aware of that, so I won't hold that against you. And he didn't really want to hear anything I had to say about Obama.
Yeah.
His reasoning now has even moved to the point where he's claiming that Frank Marshall Davis is the real father of Barack Obama. In other words, he had an illegitimate affair with Stanley Ann Dunham, Barack's mother, and she would not get an abortion. There's absolutely no proof of this other than a reference to a Frank who was a mentor, and the media determined that it was Frank Marshall Davis. This is part of the story that Sean Hannity ran Sunday night. He did about 15 or 20 minutes on Davis, but never made the claim that Davis would be his father, just that he was a Marxist, he was a communist, and he was an influence on Obama during what he prints. Andy Martin prints that he went to the Punahou School from 1975 through 1979. Now, the story is that he went there upon his return in 1971. But I point out that there are conflicting stories, conflicting accounts from his sister, Maya Satoru, Aang, and himself. His dates are staggered. We're dealing with dates like 1967 through 71, 68 through 71, 68 through 73, 68 through 74, and so you're not getting the truth from any of these people. It's just a parade of lies. Now, I'll agree with him that there's some obfuscation going on. If I'm going to trust my discernment, I'm going to say, and I've said this to my listening audience, and I've written this, that there is no way that Barack Obama was born in Hawaii. And there was no way that he was born in Africa. And I'm going to hold to the fact that he was born in Indonesia. There are many anomalies and in the research that come out that parallel that thesis or that premise. Now, Andy Martin basically told me that he didn't want to hear anything that I had to say that he didn't want to be accused of being influenced by something that someone else researched. And I said, if it leads to the truth, what is the problem with that? Do you have a problem with the truth?
Mm-hmm.
I take issue with that. That's like someone who's hosting a show, and there seems to be a lot of this going on right now on some of the new talk shows, especially on the Patriot networks, where they're saying, you know, this conspiracy stuff, you know, why do you waste your time on that? You can never prove these things. No, quite to the contrary. The very word conspiracy implies that there's something illegal going on, and it's an orchestrated effort by a group of people to pull the wool over somebody's eyes.
Yes.
and commit some sort of a crime or illegal act.
Right.
That's what a conspiracy is.
Yes,
but
right.
It's gone now from this spin term that they use, conspiracy theory. They stopped using it. Now they're just attacking the word conspiracy.
The word conspiracy, yes.
I didn't invent the word, but I certainly know what the meaning of the word is, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you now I question this. Martin is from Chicago, and so he's in Obama's, you know, home territory. I mean, he's right there in his backyard. So,
yeah.
My intent is not to discredit him. I'll give him credit for filing the lawsuit. I don't have the interest in doing that. I'm about discovering the facts and analyzing them and to the best of my ability, my God-given ability, and with my analytical skills and my research skills.
Mm-hmm.
And my motive is to get to the truth. Now, if he's right, then I'll correct myself. If he can prove without a doubt that that Frank Marshall Davis is his father, I'll tip my hat to him. I'll have to go out and buy one, but I'll tip it. Okay, and Phil Berg, I'm with Phil Berg because he's really addressing the whole issue of citizenship. And he did go to Kenya, and he did look up documents. Now,
mm-hmm.
we know there are documents in Indonesia. It seems the one place, and this is the point of bringing this out, is because I'm watching the whole country be brainwashed. And this is really the part that you and I are going to discuss with your permission and your blessing, this issue of brainwashing and how it's being done. I came across a very interesting piece by Fred Weinberg. It's a PDF file online called Obama's Use of Hidden Hypnosis in His Speeches.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 67 pages of a very, very scientific, very open-minded, and actually supported by a lot of research. There is an individual that is a professor at Columbia University, and I wonder if he was actually one of Obama's professors. He had written a book called The Rape of the Mind, which actually talks about mind control and the techniques that they use.
Yep.
And many, many people, you yourself, and you've heard me mention this, there's something about when he speaks that just makes you feel very uncomfortable. Now, granted, there are a lot of people that feel very comfortable and are cheering and hooting and hollering and whistling and screaming and waving their hands in the air, holding their signs up, smiling, almost like puppets.
Yes.
Or let's say like puppets that are just reacting to somebody pulling their strings. And he goes into, Weinberg goes into this very detailed analysis about the technique that is being used. And he goes beyond what the media in their propaganda and their advertising uses and gets into the syntax of how he says, now I stand before you, or as I stand before you, which are small little truths that he puts out. He counts 14 times he uses it within the speech, that one phrase. I heard Joe Biden use the same phrases tonight on another speech.
Right.
And so they're both using the same technique, quite a bit different from what Sarah Palin is using. She's using the little wink and the little smile it's almost like a Cheshire cat grin.
Yes.
But there's no substance to what any of these people are saying. In fact, he even, Weinberg gets into the issue of how he dances around the answers to the questions, that people are asking in public. And just doing these mantras, these, I guess you could call them hypnotic mantras. Very, very interesting piece. Now, I sent you a copy of it. I don't know if you had even...
Yes, I did, thank you. I caught it on Rents, and I often do, is I make a fast scan of Rents' latest articles from the last 3 to 5 days, and if I had the time, I'd read them all, but I just typically click out 10 or 15, open separate tabs, and take a fast look at each one, and the ones that I think are extremely hot, I'll often repost at my website, or at least I'll read it, so it'll register, because he has a lot of good stuff there. And yeah, so I did take a fast look at it, and thank you for bringing it to my attention. I always appreciate that. Yeah, I saw the piece. It's a good piece. I haven't read it thoroughly. I mentioned to you this morning. I read the first 2 pages, and I quickly, it's 60 pages long. It's a long, so to do it well, it requires a couple hours of reading, well, at least an hour. And, so let me though, this is a good opportunity to talk about this phenomenon. When I put up an article called British Israel 4 years ago, 3-4 years ago, I'm not sure. In the article, I mentioned that I've come across very well-written articles about a type of mass audience hypnotic techniques that are used by evangelical types, particularly the TV evangelicals, but even the ones that, you know, appear in, you know, John Hagee type, et cetera. And there's a very specific... They're using a type of hypnosis. This article that's embedded in my British Israel article talks about this phenomena in which they use, we mentioned this before in other talks, they, in the case of evangelicals, they get them hyped up to accept the methods they're trying to inculcate by jacking up their emotions first. So that's why they use music of a very certain type to, you know, worm into people's
subconscious, yeah,
and into their heart so that they'll kind of drop their intellectual guards, as it were, to what's being presented, to sway you along, to carry you along on this, you know, this kind of sever of emotionalism. And then they use very specific words and very specific techniques. In the case of evangelicals, it's the dynamics of the voice of the speaker that has a great deal to do with how effective he is in hypnotizing his audience. It's the repetition of certain key words. The process is called conversion. It's a term in psychology that's specifically comes out of hypnotic techniques. It's called conversion. And you know when you've accomplished conversion, you've sucked your prey into your net, is when they're got their arms up in the air and they're waving back and forth, you know, in the evangelicals case, you know, hallelujah. They're throwing their hands in the air and praise the Lord, praise the Lord. Well, they got them. That is the tip-off. That they've sucked them in, and gullible people who are unaware of this manipulation, people who are, you know, easily convinced of shaky facts, because they're being enchanted with music, they're being enchanted with I don't want to use the word mob, but group emotions. Let's put it that way. If you find yourself in a group, a large group, in one of these mega churches, evangelical types of thing, and all the people around you have this sort of fervency to their participation. They're not just passively sitting there and quietly just listening. No, no, they're emotionally involved in this. Well, if you're sitting in the middle of that, there is energy there. There's thought forms. There's energy waves that are bombarding you just like a microwave. It's really, unless you're prepared for it, it's easy to get swept up in the emotion and just join in.
Yeah, I'd like to read some of these statements for the listening audience so they get an idea of what we're talking about here.
Okay, good.
This is on page 17 of Weinberg's analysis under the heading "An Examination of Obama's Use of Hidden Hypnosis Techniques in His Speeches."
Okay.
Number one, and you'll hear the phrase repeated, so I don't need to point it out.
Okay.
That's why I stand here tonight, because for 232 years, at each moment when the promise was in jeopardy, ordinary men and women, students and soldiers, farmers and teachers, nurses and janitors, found the courage to keep it alive. The fundamentals we use to reach economic strength are whether we are living up to the fundamental promise that has made this country great, a promise that is the only reason I am standing here tonight.
Right.
But I stand before you tonight because all across America something is stirring. What the naysayers don't understand is that this election has never been about me. It's about you. Now, he goes on again to point out six more times you're going to hear this phrase. Now is the time to end this addiction and to understand that drilling is a stopgap measure, not a long-term solution. Not even close. Now is the time to finally meet our moral obligation to provide every child a world-class education, because it will take nothing less to compete in the global economy. Now is the time to finally keep the promise of affordable, accessible health care for every single American. Now is the time to help families with paid sick days and better family leave, because nobody in America should have to choose between keeping their jobs and caring for a sick child or ailing parent. Now is the time to change our bankruptcy laws so that your pensions are protected ahead of CEO bonuses, and the time to protect Social Security for those for future generations. And now is the time to keep the promise of equal pay for an equal day's work, because I want my daughters to have exactly the same opportunity as your sons. Now, he's not saying anything of substance there at all. The key phrase is now is the time.
He's repeating a mantra, now is the chime, which has a mesmerizing hypnotic effect. Adolf Hitler did the same thing in his speeches.
Yes. And now he gives many more examples throughout here, but the reason I point that out is He's saying, and to understand that drilling, he's speaking about oil drilling, is a stopgap measure. What does that mean? What they're doing in oil, and the issue he should be addressing, is they're hiding the fact that they've discovered trillions of barrels of oil, and they're hiding it from you.
Yes, right.
Okay, that's the truth there. The issue about providing a world-class education, you have Stanford University's Stanford Research Institute, or SRI, running the National Education Association, and they're dumbing down the kids. What do you mean, world-class education? The
right.
agenda is to dumb down the kids
right,
and
are.
The public. Okay, now is the time to finally keep the promise of affordable, accessible health care for every single American. Wait, he says every single American. Does that mean every non-married American?
Very good. Very good.
Okay, I mean, you know, there's doublespeak in everything he's saying.
Excellent, Don. Excellent.
Okay, and then he's talking about paid sick days. Where are the jobs? Bring our jobs back. You know, none of this means anything. And he's making an issue out of whether or not you can go home to see your sick child. If they weren't spraying chemtrails and poisoning the kids with vaccines,
the kid wouldn't be sick.
They wouldn't be sick if they would let, you know, I mean, those are the issues.
Yes.
Oh, man, I get so angry.
Well, good, but I mean, that's what it takes. It takes
now,
getting upset so you can react, you know.
One more point now, and I'm going to bring this up. I brought this up on a show last night with Michael Herzog.
Okay.
I discovered a child sacrifice with the last name Obama. The name is Renee L. Abena Obama, and there's a real estate deal that went down after the death of the baby. The baby lived 56 days, born on Halloween night or Halloween day, and died Christmas Day the same year. Total of 56 days. Illuminati number 11 is in the number of days the baby lived, 56. 5 and 6 is 11. The number of years between Obama's great-grandfather's birth and the death of this baby was exactly 110 years to the day. The number 110 stands for 11 in numerology. The next day, the 26th of December 2004, the tsunami hit Indonesia, killing 146,000 people. 1 plus 4 is 5 plus 6 is 11. The numerology is in the event, and he's talking about he wants his daughters to have exactly the same opportunities as our sons. What does that mean? What the heck does that statement mean? With an Illuminati child of satanic sacrifice in his background, and a piece of real estate to prove it.
Yes.
The baby was given an alias, just like his previous alias,
yes.
And next to it, in parentheses, is written the word life estate. I think I sent you a copy of that so you could see that.
Yes, yes. You've made a big discovery, Don, and I do plan to write about it in detail and essentially showcasing this discovery that you've made of this sacrifice, which is not uncommon. If you study the Illuminati carefully enough, and you realize that part of the price of being among these elites and being in among these groups is that
in the club,
very often it involves the sacrifice of firstborn children. That's quite common, and if you carefully, Arizona Wilder revealed this information. So did Bryce Taylor. It's among high level individuals of mind control, slaves, etc. They've revealed that there is this sacrificial part of it, and very often it's the firstborn. It's kind of the ticket. Arizona Wilder used that very expression in her videotape interview with David Icke called Revelations of a Mother Goddess. It was made in 1999. She was referring to the JonBenet Ramsey case, and she said, you know, the father is involved with these people, and that's the price. It cost you one of your kids. And if you look carefully at I remember when the current emperor of Japan got married to his current wife. It was a big deal because it was a typical play up in the newspaper, just as when Diana got married to Prince Charles. A lot of fairy tale writing in the newspaper, you know. So anyway, their first child, were told in the newspaper, had died prematurely, and it was lost. And then their second child was successful. Well, of course, I'm guessing, but what makes far more sense to me is rather than I forgot how far the baby went. It went for many, many months. Somewhere between 6 and 8 months. The child was probably removed and sacrificed. That's probably what actually happened. But yet they it's just a brief mention in the paper, you know, so sad that her termination, you know, pregnancy, unfortunately, you know, terminated in an abortion, and you know, or you know, spontaneous abortion, whatever the story was, you know, the child was probably sacrificed. It was the firstborn.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look carefully at people who have Illuminati names, look carefully at family members of Kennedy, Sinclair, DuPont, Astor. Look carefully at each of those cases and look at the firstborn child. Did it survive? Very often, it's often hard to get the info because they typically don't, they don't put in any official biographies.
Well, you have that in the Bush family. You know, H.W. Bush's daughter died, the oldest daughter.
Yes.
You know, you have it there, too.
Right.
It's more than that. You have wives disappearing.
You have grandparents
dying out at sea.
Right.
You know, when it's normal to go from California to New York via land, but no, he chose to go around South America. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Now, you've got some very good stuff there, and there's future stuff that we're going to collaborate on concerning a lot of the corruption that you've come upon on the land, and I've been in contact with some people who are corroborating that corruption tremendously, and we will reveal that info at a later date. Two things I want to bring up now.
We have to close in about within 5 minutes here. So
okay, so I'll make this fast. These are just summary caps. I just want to mention it just to get it out there. I just put another article on my website, I think yesterday, a very short one about high-definition TV. The government has required a mandatory switchover in February of 2009. That's just a few months away. I already have maybe four articles on my website starting, April or so of this year is the first article I put up there.
Mm-hmm.
Because someone asked me about it, a reader. What's going on? Why are they for it? So I put up articles in which I'm speculating, but it certainly seems logical to me that what's really going on, and the reason they're forcing the change instead of just allowing analog and, you know, digital to both be transmitted, the reason I believe, and I'm not the only one that's saying this, but I want to emphasize that there is really an agenda of a covert surveillance and monitoring that is at the heart of the forced switchover. I believe that there is a hidden technology in the newer high-definition televisions and in these, even in these conversion boxes that you are required to place in your home in order to convert the digital signal so your older analog-style TV can show a TV picture. I believe that there is monitoring surveillance equipment within that equipment. I also believe suspect that there is similar monitoring equipment in cable TV boxes that you set on top. I don't have cable TV, but I presume.
Well, they're in the TVs too, and probably have been since the mid to late 70s.
Well, I don't know if they're in that early, but do you have evidence of that? What I was about to say, and the reason I'm bringing this whole up, is the very latest article is that, yes, I too was led to believe in the newer LCD monitors, you know, the liquid crystal display. They're
mm-hmm.
not the old CRT screens. They're the so-called flat screens. Sometimes they're called plasma TVs. You know, the flat screens when you go into a Circuit City store, you buy these big flat screen TVs. I was led to believe that there was a little camera in the LCD monitor that is looking back at you, that they, you know, cameras can be so tiny. You can buy at one of these internet outlets, you can buy a camera that's as small as a shirt button so that you can wear it, you know, as part of a shirt and film something. cameras now are so incredibly small. It's unbelievable. So it would be easy to do it. So anyway, I had speculated in the second to the last article I put about the reasons behind the high-definition four switchover is because they have this surveillance monitoring equipment that is digital in nature. So naturally, you have to use this new equipment to get the digital, additional signal to be received. And that really, it's a way to surveil you and to listen to your conversations in your house as well as see you. And so I speculated that there's a man in another country, I won't name the country, who sent me an email, and I reproduced it on my website just yesterday. He's actually taken apart and disassembled newer plasma TVs and these LCD screens, and he discovered the cameras. He said he has at least four different brands that he's taken apart and found these tiny little cameras that are facing you, the viewer.
Yeah, they can, in the analog TVs, they're placing them in the vicinity of the remote control sensor.
Okay, well then you might be right, Don. I didn't know that. I presumed that they started this insertion late 90s with the newer TVs, but you're telling me as far as the 70s with the remote control.
Oh, they have them in hotel rooms and conference centers and in bars and all kinds of places,
you know. That sounds reasonable, but I'm talking about home TVs. Do you think they were mass produced as early as the 70s?
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it. In fact, there's a phenomenon in the closing minute or so that we have here. There's a phenomenon that exists with a loudspeaker. If you turn the volume of a stereo system up loud enough, you can actually speak into the speaker and it'll work like a microphone. And you can also listen to sound through a microphone. That you have to be very careful at the volume level that you drive it as an output source. But you can do this very easily with a two-phase type of wire. You wouldn't use an XLR connector. You would use a quarter-inch phone jack or an RCA jack.
Yeah.
Just the positive and the ground wire on it. And
mm-hmm.
There's a difference, of course. It's nothing like it's intended to be. A speaker is what it is because it's causing the sound to vibrate outward, moving air.
Yes.
And the principle of a microphone is the vibrations picked up by the diaphragm within the microphone.
Yes. Yes.
But a speaker has a diaphragm too.
Yeah, exactly. It is. In fact, when I was younger, and I learned about electronics when I was a teenager because I was fascinated by radio. And I used to do that. You could use a speaker both as a microphone and mm-hmm. a speaker. You just throw a switch, and that's what they used to do in the old days with the handheld, communications for police or whatever. They hauled the button down. Well, they were using the same speaker to both.
Yeah, now if you think about, when you're looking in a mirror, you're seeing a reflection. They certainly have the technology to produce a crystal clear picture without pixelating or pulsing the light. And the purpose of the pulsations is for the hypnotic effect.
Right.
And they can do things subliminally with the sound. And I tell you, I've caught things on regular news shows or specials that I'll tape, and then I'll move frame by frame through a program. I'll go through the whole hour doing this, and you'll catch words on commercials. There's a Disney movie, I think it's The Lion King, that actually has pornographic statements that flash up on the screen in a split second.
Yes, that's absolutely true. The Littlest Mermaid also has in the original version just microseconds flashing on the screen of sexual content. Absolutely, yep.
Mm-hmm. Like they'll have the female figure on the screen and in various parts of the rest of the screen like over the sky or on the ground where there's tall grass or something like that, they'll flash a word, I should rape this girl or something. You know,
yes.
they make, I'm being general, but, or
yeah, but the idea is there, it's done so quickly, the conscious mind doesn't pick it up, the subconscious mind does pick it up and record it.
Yes, and then you wonder why these kids become so unmanageable and have so many psychological problems later on.
Yes. They're being programmed, and they don't know it.
Yes, exactly. And of course, the parents think they're doing the kid a favor or themselves a favor by relinquishing or giving in and allowing the kid to do that. But you
yes.
can see this in many, many commercials and TV programs. So you can presume, I mean, what does your intuition tell you? They're not going to use this technology to give us a good picture. In fact, I've seen high definition television and there's nothing that excites me about it. There's nothing.
Yes, thank you. I've seen it too, and my feeling is it's too good, it's too high definition. I feel somewhat there's a unreal quality to it. It almost looks sharper than reality. You know, somehow the sharpness, the crispness of it is so intense that it feels and looks unnatural. Frankly, I prefer the temperament of the current analog TV. It's sharp enough. It feels about right. And any more tight definition, you know, a greater fidelity than it seems than in real life.
Yes. Well,
fidelity seems sharper than real life visual, you know, appearance of things.
Yes, when you ask yourself the question, what is TV used for today? It's used to make money and to promote propaganda, to disseminate propaganda. Mm-hmm. Now they're making it clearer. It's going to be more vivid. Propaganda.
Yes.
More vivid mind control.
Yes.
Just use common sense.
Yep.
It's not going to make your life any better, I can tell you that.
No.
So Ken, we're out of time.
Okay, we're out. So we wasted another perfectly good 2 hours rambling on, but it's
no,
always
no,
fun.
It was fun, and we covered a lot of stuff, and I'm glad you were at least willing to let me bring out that portion on the Obama technique of speech delivery.
I like doing it this way, Don. Your comments add a great deal to the substance of these little talks. I'm as much as a rapt listener of what you have to say as the folks listening to this over their computer.
Well, you are on again next week on Thursday. So we have no idea what we'll be talking about then. Maybe we can do take 5 minutes and do a whole 5 minutes on Sarah Palin.
Yes, I'm happy to do that. I mean, hopefully we can think of enough to say in 5 minutes. But yes, she's
That's
an abomination. I mean, I'm sorry. As you know, as a candidate for vice president is what I meant. She's an abomination. It's the most ludicrous proposition of individual that they ever put up for high public office.
This whole event
might as well be, you know, who's that lady on used to do the TV commercials for paper towel? I forget the name, but you know the gal who wipes at the counter and
Rosie was that
her
name?
Rosie. I mean, it's like putting up Rosie for vice president. This is the most ridiculous event I've ever witnessed in my life. You think Obama's a joke as a candidate? God almighty. Rosie the Riveter is going to be Vice President of the United States, just a heartbeat away. It's ridiculous. So yeah, we can talk about her.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot for being on the show, and I'm going to say goodnight to our listening audience. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. Thank you for listening, and our guest this evening, Mr. Ken Adachi, will be back next Thursday. In the meantime, I encourage you to visit his website, educate-yourself.org, or educate-yourself.org, And special thanks to Don Newsom for making this show possible, and Seth Hendrick on the sound. In the meantime, I wish all of my listening audience a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.